Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned into the Pastor Spot, a community Christian fellowship. A radio ministry of community Christian fellowship. I'm Terry Tackett, the host of the show. It's my privilege to turn it over to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor. I'm sorry.
You okay, Terry?
Yes.
I got y'all jumbled up, didn't I? Rushing around there. Yeah. See the thing. Look, you want me to start over for you?
Yes, please.
All right. Good evening, everyone. This is the Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. I'm Pastor Steve Whitaker, your host, and you'll be with me for the next 40 minutes. So good to be here tonight. What a week it's been. It has been. I've felt the temperatures drop. Hey, we can finally sleep at night. Isn't that kind of nice? How you been, Terry?
Well, other than that, I've been fine. Except I say this a million times, and of course today I can't remember it.
Well, this last week we've seen everybody starting back to school, and that's been kind of good, seeing how the kids are doing. All my grandkids are back in school again, and things are getting busy. I made it to a football game the other night, which was a great time watching that, and I'm watching one of my grandsons and several other kids I know playing ball, and they had a great time. And this week I get to go watch another of my grandkids play football, so it's that time of year. And I've got kids in. Julia will be starting her hockey soon, sled hockey, and we have kids in show choir, and my one grandson is in golf this year, and I'm trying to think what I'm forgetting, because you know I'm going to forget something. I've got a couple more playing football, so you know the kids are out there having a great time. I'll tell you what we've been kind of fun lately is we have had a couple of youth group activities that have just been great. Holly, my daughter, one of my daughters, they had it at their house the other night, and they've got a pond in the front. And they did something that I remember Shirley and I did years ago when we were in Maui. And it was a thing where you take cardboard and duct tape and plastic and you make a boat. And you have to float and get in this boat and make it work. And they had the kids make a boat and they had to get it across the pond. First one across the pond won. And I guess they just had a blast. But, you know, good, clean fun. It's great stuff. It's good that they were able to do that. But anyway, it's been kind of a busy week. Things are kind of busy at the church, getting ready for our fall festival in the park, which, by the way, is the first Sunday in October in Prospect Park. And we have, it's just a neat day. We've got music and games and food. And this year we're actually going to have barbecued pork, which will be great, pulled pork. That'll be some good stuff. And it's just hay rides for the kids and just a fun time, and everyone's welcome to come out to that, and it's usually a pretty good time for that. But church has been busy lately. A lot of good stuff going on in town. It seems odd that the summer went so fast. Cannot believe how fast this, but it didn't start till when. Summer started so late, and I mean, time-wise, it's the same, but it just seems so late because of the timing of everything that was going on, is the weather and whatnot. But I was trying to think about, what we wanted to talk about tonight, and there's so much going on. I don't want to talk about Jeffrey Epstein, though. It seems like everybody else is, and things of that nature. But don't you find it interesting that we have a tendency to fill our news cycles and our minds and our mind with things that really aren't that important in the grand scheme of things. Now, if you're involved in some of those things individually, yeah, they're important to you at the time. But as a country and as a nation, a lot of the stuff that takes up our news cycle and things that we do are things that really aren't going to affect our day-to-day lives too much. You know what I mean? I think the things that affect our day-to-day lives are things we're probably going to talk about around the dinner table. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that this evening. I know that most people my age, when they grew up, they ate dinner at what we would call a dinner table. Either it's in the kitchen or the dining room. And it was a time when the family came together, and as they came together, they would talk about, you know, the things of the day. A lot of times, well, most families, I know in my family, you began the prior to the meal, you had a prayer. And if there was something pertinent of the day, too, you would take that to God. But you would thank God for the day and the blessings you had, and certainly the food you were eating. And you would come together, and we'd sit there and have a meal together and share things. And we had... It wasn't always the easiest time. Sometimes as kids, we would get in arguments at the table and get in trouble. And we never got away with food fights back then. But I do remember one time that, never mind, I'm not going there. It had something to do with a cheek and a fork, but I won't go there. But anyway, we used to sit around a table. And now I remember when I was a teenager, we had some neighbors across the street. And every night, their mom would give one of them money, and they'd go to McDonald's, and they would get like a grocery bag full of whatever and just throw it on the kitchen table. And as they came and went, people would reach in the bag and grab whatever they wanted. Now, to me, that looked great because we didn't get much of that kind of stuff. But, however, there was no family unit. There was no family dynamic, everyone coming and going. And I think that we've missed so much in doing that. Grab it as you can and go on the run. One thing I really admire my kids for is that all of them make a concerted effort to sit around the dinner table for dinner. A lot of times, you know, one of them may be passing while the other one's going, but they try to find that time to come together and sit at the table and as much as it is possible and be a family. And that's such an important time. I think we've lost that today, Terry. We've lost a lot of that ability to draw in close as a family and discuss each other's issues and problems. And even if there's times when arguments start, they're going to. That's what families do. They love each other, but they have a tendency to argue sometimes. Doesn't mean they don't love each other, though. And I would love to see people, you know, realize that we do need to come to the table. Just like God talks to us about, you know, when Jesus talked about coming to the Lord's table or the Lord's Supper, which is as we know, the when we take communion, which was Jesus broke bread with his disciples. And, you know, we learn in the New Testament, we talk about in Acts and people breaking bread together. And, of course, Jesus went to the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus and different people and ate. And it's a time that it's an important time. It's a time of sharing. It's a time of there's a certain vulnerability to having someone at dinner or being at dinner with someone. A little more intimate of a setting than going somewhere, going out somewhere. It's easy to go out somewhere and grab a table and everybody orders. But, you know, when you have someone in at your table or you're at somebody else's table, it's a little different, don't you think? It's more special, I think would be one way to put it. But, you know, it's like most things today, though. Everyone has gotten so private, and one lives behind closed doors. And I don't know whether they're afraid of... I don't know. Why do you think people do that?
I'm like you. I just think that they want to alienate themselves from people, and they just, you know...
You know, this is my house, this is my space.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, maybe that's part of it. We're so busy doing everything else that maybe that's just our, you know, don't, I'm going behind my closed doors now, don't bother me, don't talk to me, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think we're missing a great thing when we're doing that. It's that family time that's together. I remember as a kid, you know, we'd go out and at breakfast time, you know, you grab a bowl of cereal or piece of toast or whatever. Breakfast was, other than a special occasion, was no big deal at our house. But it's kind of funny when we watch the old television shows, all the families sat around and mom served them breakfast, and I got a kick out of that. Because, you know, really, though, I think probably about 75 years ago, especially in farm families, that's the way it was. You know, everybody go out and do chores in the morning, and I would imagine most of the time mom stayed in, and maybe one of the older girls got breakfast ready, and then when your chores are done, you all came in and ate. And people think, well, you know, Pastor, that's kind of old-fashioned. Yeah, I guess so, but boy, we sure are missing the closeness we've had as people. And I just get a thrill. I never used to give it a second thought, But anymore, when somebody waves or is polite or holds the door or opens the door for you or steps out of the way or says thank you, it makes me feel great because you just don't hear it all the time. And it's wonderful when you do hear that. But we've got kids starting school. Go back to that a minute. We got kids starting school, and this is difficult for a lot of them. A lot of kids go to school hungry. They don't have those provisions at home. One thing that I am happy to see is that the schools in the morning, they do have something available for the kids so they can kick their day off okay. But I think that we have to be aware of where each and every one of us comes from. And not everybody comes from the same place. And that's why it is difficult for me to see kids that are really struggling and in a bad way, whether it be at home. You know, there's always something going on at home. And I think that sometimes if we knew what was going on in people's lives, which we don't need to know that, but if we did, maybe we could be a little more sympathetic. What do you think? I've said this before, you know, I would never, you could sit a room full of people together and someone might think this person's got a great life or that person's got a great life. But if you put all their problems on a table, everybody would keep their own because we just don't know. The blessing for me is to know that, you know, I have Jesus Christ in my life, and no matter what happens, he's still there. He's not going anywhere. And, you know, that's something I can count on for eternity. So it takes that in life with me, it takes that 800-pound elephant out of the room. Because usually the 800-pound elephant in the room is, what if everything falls apart? What happens when I die? What happens when, if this doesn't work and that doesn't work? You know, when you can trust Christ with your life and know that he has a plan for your life and give it to your life to him, you know, suddenly you're free to operate easier. I find it interesting that people will say that Christianity or they'll say religion or Christianity is so confining when I find it to be just the opposite. I find a great freedom in it because when you realize your place with God and who you are, there's a great freedom to then live every day and not worry about tomorrow. You know, the Bible tells us that, you know, if he's going to feed the sparrows of the field, how much more is he going to do for you? And the truth is that's very, very true. He's going to take care of us. I really wish that with school starting that our families, our parents that want to hold to types of traditional values, that most of them are indeed grounded and based in Judeo-Christian values in this country, those that still claim to believe in that and want that in their family would stand firm on it and would be more outspoken about it. I think that a lot of times we're so afraid of somebody not liking us or somebody, you know, we don't want to make waves. We want everyone to like us. Does that mean that we compromise our beliefs and who we are for that? I don't think so. I want my kids to be able to stand up in a classroom and say, you know, that's great that you're teaching A, B, or C, but I don't agree with that, and this is why, and yet be freed to do that. I was listening to I was reading an article the other day about a Yale professor that has come out and said that evolution, he said, there's just no way it could have happened. Now, this is someone that, you know, is reportedly had always been in that camp. Didn't believe in God, any of those kind of things. But he said, the more he studies and looks at it, it's impossible. He said, you know, the odds are so great that there's just no way possible that the evolutionary model can work. Now he said, now he's not ready to jump on board and be a Christian. I'm not saying that. But what he is saying is that, you know, there has to be, he goes, you have to pay attention to the theory of intelligent design because he said, it makes a lot more sense than the evolutionary model does. But the sad thing that he said, one of them is, that it not only is it being taught as fact, but in the education field, in the science field, if you stand up and say, wait, that doesn't work, or it's not true, you're in trouble. You're going to be fired. You're going to be could be fired, ostracized. You may not be able to get any grants. You may not get any fellowships, whatever the case is, because they come down hard on anyone that doesn't agree with them and toe the line, so to speak. So because of that, I think there's been a great fear amongst parents and amongst anyone that would dare stand up to a teacher in a classroom and say, I don't believe that, and this is why. And if we are truly a country of great freedom and great free speech, where we are willing to listen to other people's speech as we say that we are, that student should have every right, without ridicule, to be able to stand up and say, wait a minute, you know, I don't believe this. This is what I believe, and this is why. And not only do that, but then when he makes that statement, to be respected for it. Because I will tell you, if one of our students stood up in class and told the teacher that was teaching evolution, Darwinian evolution, and was teaching that, and one of our students would say, you know what, you know, you're just a lunatic, you're stupid, you know, what you're saying makes no sense, just sit down and be quiet. They get expelled. But on the other hand, many times the student, the professor, has no problem with ridiculing that student and putting them in their place for the same thing. I'm not afraid to speak up. And the more that I speak up, the more that it emboldens me to do so. Because I believe what I know to be true, so why would I not want to speak up? And I think that when we don't speak up, in a sense, we're denying God. I mean, we're saying, look, God, I believe in you. I believe in the Bible. But you know what? I really don't want to rock the boat, and so I'm not going to tell anybody about you. You know, Jesus says, if you deny me before men, I'll deny you before my Father. So we better not be denying people. Excuse me. We better not be denying Jesus before men. And I think by sometimes being quiet, not saying anything, staying in the shadows, I think that we do that a lot. We have an all-out assault today, an all-out assault on Christianity and Christian theology and biblical theology. And the arguments for against it can be brought in very subtly sometimes. I have a hard time when someone says, yeah, I believe the Bible, I believe in God, but I don't believe in this, and I don't... Okay, so which part of God do you believe in, and which part of the Bible do you believe in? And many times, if people would just open and study Scripture, they would understand that it's not an either-or situation. It's an all-or-nothing situation. Either you believe what Jesus said, or you don't. You believe the Word of God says, or you don't. You know, the one of the great arguments out there with the six-day creation is that, well, you know, a day to the Lord is just 1,000 years. So, you know, what that basically means is that, you know, God's timeless. So in between each one of those days could have taken billions and billions of years, right? Well, there's a problem with that. The problem with that is that's not what he was saying. That's not what Moses was writing. And if people look in Scripture, they see that Jesus even confirmed the words of Moses and their accuracy. And as far as that time frame between those times, what part of evening and morning were the first day, second day, third? What part of that do people not understand? You know, that tells to me an evening and a morning. But there's so many other arguments. And what I don't understand is if we truly believe in a holy God that can take you after you have passed away, after you've been in the ground, after you've decomposed or burned up, whatever the case may be, if he can take you and bring that all back into one whole being and you live eternity in heaven, and people want to believe that, okay? They want to believe that. What is the problem with believing that he can take a man from dust and make him? Why would you argue with that? It doesn't make sense that you would. So why can't people accept a biblical creation? At the same time, they don't look into evolution itself and why it doesn't make sense. There's too many holes that can't be filled. we talked about this a little bit last week, you know, the amount of holes in evolution and in the whole evolutionary theory. DNA itself is huge, you know, just to study DNA. If you don't want to believe in God, fine. That's your business. That's your prerogative to do so. If you don't want to believe in creation, that's fine. But at least be honest about the fact that it takes great faith, which you say you don't believe in, to believe in evolution because there's so many holes in it. I personally want to know where, if this is a true thing, where all these stages are in our archaeology. You know, where is the pre-dawn man? Shouldn't there be millions of them out there? You know, and the different stages of where are these skeletons? Where are these people? They don't exist. So what we've done is basically said, look, we don't believe in God. We're not going to believe in God. So we have to come up with something. So here's what we're going to do, and we're going to take it to here. You know, Darwin himself said that the reason he came up with that theory was because he was angry with God. And he wanted nothing to do with God. So he comes up with a theory. And then people buy into it because, you know, hey, it's as good as anything else out there. Let's go with it. And then, you know, education is supposed to be learning. And in learning, we're supposed to learn things that are, things that were, and things that can be. That's all part of learning. But when we take learning and take something that we know literally makes no sense, and decide it's going to fit our agenda, so we're going to teach this as fact, to the point that now we have college graduates that are teaching, and have had for a long time, some getting ready to retire, that have been taught this to the point that they don't know why they believe it, but they believe it, because they've been told it's true, and they've never investigated it. So they just go by what, you know, well, this is what education says. This is what science says. What science? Whose science? You know what I mean? Am I living in a play world? I mean, yeah, scientists will go this way. How many scientists are there out there, and there's oodles of them, that are creationists? Or scientists that are out there that they may not believe in God, but they say we have to have an intelligent design. This could not have happened the way that you're saying. The odds are far too great. And so we've got all these young kids starting school, and many of them, I see these little rascals starting preschool this year, you know. And I see kids that have come to my Sunday school classes, or our Sunday school classes, and sing Jesus Loves Me, and maybe at Christmas time they're part of the Christmas program, and then they get to school and they're taught that there is no Jesus and that everything came about from some event or whatever they come up with. I mean, it's all different. You know, they've never quite figured out that origin part, you know. It just happened and they know it. How confusing to a child. How confusing to a child. And this agenda has grown and grown and grown and grown in all areas of liberalism to the extent that it's off the charts. I'm going to touch an area tonight that I usually don't talk about, and it's something that's been on my heart because I want to tell you something, folks out there. I love kids, and I've always loved kids. I've got a mess of my own. I've got 14 grandkids, and I just love the innocence of a child, and there's nothing that bothers me worse in the world than any form whatsoever of child abuse. I can't handle it. Years ago, I went and took a test to be a Columbus police officer, and it wasn't going to be a problem at all. I mean, I thought that would be a great thing, and the more I got to thinking about it, I was thinking about how would I handle things on the street. And I was watching a story on the news one night, and there were some children in an abuse situation and in a fight at the front door with the police and whatnot in this news story. And I said to myself, Steve, you can't do this. You're going to shoot somebody. And I mean, I love kids that much. Leave these little ones alone. You know, Jesus says, suffer these little ones to come unto me. He also said, you ready for this, folks out there? And I'll take this one to heart. Any one of you that would abuse or to turn these little ones away from me or to stop them from coming to me. It is better that a millstone be hung around your neck and you be drowned in the depths of the sea. Now, what do you think of that one? Wow. You hear what I'm saying? So, with that being said, I think this whole thing's going to blow up eventually anyway, because this whole new transgender thing we've come out with in the last few years is not gaining steam. I think it's losing steam, because the very people, many of them that have had those operations, are coming out and saying, you know what, I thought this was going to fix me, and I'm no better than I was. Matter of fact, I'm worse than I was. And it's the problem, I think the problem is going to be exactly what they said it was 20 years ago, and for every bit of time before that, that it is not normal to think that you are someone that you are not. And you are born with the same DNA. You know, you're going to have either you're going to have female chromosomes or male, one or the other. And you may be a more feminine acting man or a more masculine acting woman, but you are still male or female. That's it. And what I'm getting at with this is, what really bothers me is sexuality in a young person is something that they really don't even think about until they're earliest 10 years old, but 11, 12, maybe 13, when you start really feeling that identity. You remember when you were a kid, Terry, and boys and girls played together on the playground, and you could tackle a little girl in football. It was just, you were kids. You were just kids. And when I see these parents on television and in different places, that are taking young children, 3, 4, 5 years old, and saying, my child really thinks they're a female, and they're going and having physical things done to them that are going to scar them for life. Folks, this is outright abuse, and that is all it is. And it's all, I mean, that's just plain and simple. It's evil and it's sick, because this little kid doesn't know what's going on. I know of a little kid in the town that I live in that when he was about 3 years old, his parents started dressing him in pink all the time, giving him doll babies. They thought it was cute because he liked to play with his sister's dolls. Well, what kid didn't? My brother and I played with clothespin dolls when we were little because we couldn't afford army men. We made them out of clothespins, yarn, and cut-up material. I mean, it's what you do. I mean, kids play dress-up. They do all those things. Quit trying to force your agenda on these innocent children. You know, when you've got a kid and you're trying to raise them as a girl when they're a boy, and they're not even in school yet, but by the time they reach school, you know, you go to the school and say, you know, our child needs treated differently because they're really a girl. Really? You know that? You know, what happens when all of a sudden this child is 10, 11, 12 years old, and it's like, whoa, what happened to me? What'd they do to me? This isn't me. I mean, this at any other time in our history, Terry, any other time whatsoever, would have been blatant child abuse. People would have gone to prison for it. And now it's being celebrated as something great and grand that they're giving these children their freedom. That makes me sick. These kids aren't even old enough to know their sexuality or anything about it, even think about it. They're not. And when we force this stuff on kids, to me, that's one of the sickest forms of abuse there is. And it's being supported, it's being promoted, and thank God I don't think many of our local schools in Marion. But I'm telling you, it's being promoted in education centers around the world, in our schools. People are promoting it and thinking it's the greatest new thing because it's some freedom. It's not freedom. You know, there's no way there's... Point out one thing about that where there's any freedom for the child. There's nothing. What are you setting this child up for a life of? How sad. You know what I mean? It's almost like, what if I told you that little Johnny's 4 years old, and I've decided that Johnny's only going to be 4 feet tall. But I know this. There's no proof of it. Genetically, there's nothing there or anything like that. So I've decided that little Johnny needs growth hormones. And I'm going to go take him and have the doctor start giving him growth hormone injections so he's not 4 feet tall. Well, the truth was Johnny was going to be 6 feet tall, and now he's going to be 7'5" or 8 feet tall, and his lungs are going to be stretched full of holes, and his body's going to fall apart, It's the same thing. It's a parent deciding what's going to happen in a situation that hasn't happened and there's no evidence of it happening. For crying out loud, you know, I when I was a kid, I wanted to be a fireman. I'm not a fireman. Well, I'm an EMT right now. But the point is, you want to be a fireman for maybe a year. You know, my grandson, Eli'd kill me if you hear this, but my grandson for a solid year was convinced he was Curious George when he was about 4 or 5. And he walked around going, oh, you mean like Curious George? Drove us nuts! But he did, he was full on Curious George for about a year. Now, should I have gone out and given him hormone shots, or should have his parents, so he grew a bunch of hair and treated him like a monkey? No, but this is the same thing. You've got little kids that, you know, their favorite friend is Aunt So-and-so or a little girl down the street. They want to be just like them, so they want to dress. You see what I mean? They want pink shoes. Why can't I have a nice Easter dress? That's normal childhood behavior. And when people are taking it and saying, well, this kid, you know, they're obvious, they're just, you know, going to be, they're going to be a gay, they're going to be male, they're going to be whatever the case, you have no right to do that. And people, I'm telling you today, if you're out there listening, if you're a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, stand up and say, no, enough is enough. Our children are not going to be taught this stuff. Am I right? Now I got to go another step. I'm going to be in trouble by the time this show's over. I knew some young people that wanted to go to the Pride Parade to support friends. And people support their friends. Now, one thing I'm not going to talk about when I talk about the Pride Parade is anyone who believes that they are homosexual one way or the other. I'm not going to talk about that. What I'm going to say is this. You notice this year there wasn't a lot of news coverage of the Pride Parade. You know why? Because they couldn't air it. The perversion and filth that was going on in that parade, far beyond anything homosexual or lesbian, the lewd behavior, the children walking in the parade with lewd behavior going on, was off the charts. Okay, so you want to support your family member, friend, whatever, that believes that they are gay. Okay. How in the world do you keep your mouth shut to the rest of that? That's what I want to know. Why was no one talking about it? You know, if I support somebody in any entity in something they're proud of doing, and I go to help them, or I go to support them, and while I'm there, a bunch of filth and garbage and lewd perversion is going on, I'm going to say, hey, you know what, I'll support what you're doing, but man, I can't be part of this stuff. What are you hooking yourself up with that for? Why don't you have a parade over here that's clean? Because this is nasty. You see where I'm at with that? Why don't we hear that? People need to step up and speak up and say, you know what, first of all, if I were someone that believed that they were a gay person, and this other stuff was coming around and invading my parade and my space and all this stuff, I would be the first one to want to say, man, I don't want any part of that stuff. Get it away from me. Why is it all being lumped together? Huh? Why is it that somebody that would decide that they like men instead of women when they're a man would accept all this other perversion with it? It's a good question, isn't it? Do you think it's a question worth asking? I think it is. So why are we linking it all together? Because it's an anything-goes mentality today that is being an agenda that's being pushed on our young people. And it's being pushed. Anything goes. Why? Because people do not want... People do not want to stand under the authority of an almighty God, and they want to thumb their nose in the face to God and want to do anything they want to do. And that is all-inclusive of anything we feel like doing, we'll do it. And you have no right to say anything. But look what it's doing to society. Look what it's doing to, oh my word, look at our society. Look at the amount of kids that are being molested on a regular basis, and the sex trade, and the human trafficking. It's just going off the charts. Why? Because people are sitting back and saying, I want to get involved. I'm not going to step up and say anything about it. Someone might say something about me. They may not like me. They might find something in my closet. If they want to find something in your closet, they're going to find it anyway. You know, since when do we not stand up for what's right and wrong because we worry about getting in trouble? I'll tell you when. It's when the only thing that we're worried about is our own skin. You know what I mean, Terry? I care too much about people. And I know God put me on this earth to help people. And I care too much about other people to keep my mouth shut and watch this keep going downhill at the rate of speed that it's going downhill. And it is. And people just sit back and say, oh, that's so good and that's all wonderful. Let me tell you something, folks. When your mind has gotten so perverted that you do some of the stuff these people do today, what's this new pansexual thing? That means that anything you want to have sex with, even an inanimate object, is all good. And we have Hollywood people coming out and saying, I am pansexual. You know, a dog, a cat, it doesn't matter. Holy cow. I mean, you got to be kidding me. And people are just sitting back, hey, they have a right. No, they don't. We have a moral, or supposed to have a moral society, where we can keep our children safe. Let me ask you a question. If you know somebody that is having a relationship with their Great Dane, and I know that sounds horrible and coming out of a pastor, but I'm telling you, there's a method to my madness here. And they're that sick that's what they're doing. And then you find out that, well, it so happens that couple is babysitting your child while you're at work during the day, and you find out this person is having relationships with animals. Are you going to feel safe leaving your kid there? No, you're not, are you? No one is. So why is it okay? You see my point? Why shouldn't we be speaking out and saying, whoa, 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 leave this sexual stuff away from our kids? Teachers out there, you need to be teaching what you should be teaching. Educating. If kids are in a sexual abuse situation, it needs reported immediately. But it is not your place to form their mind over where they need to be sexually when they're little kids. And I think most of you out there agree with me, and they're good, solid teachers and good, solid people. But I'm telling you right now, we got to stand up against this stuff because it's sweeping through this country like crazy. And these little kids are beautiful little kids that need to be taught and mentored and loved and hugged, not abused and twisted and played with their mind and playing with them physically and genetically and all the things that they're doing to these kids. It makes me ill. It truly does. You know, you can say what you want about capital punishment, but I'm sorry. You're a child molester. That tears it for me. I can't do it. Folks, we got to step up and protect our kids. We got to do it. You know, this isn't something that we just talk about. Oh, it's just another problem society. No, we've got to protect and love these little ones. We got to do it. I want to tell you something else, too. God is not going to tolerate it. You remember what I said about it's better that a millstone be hung around your neck and you be drowned in the depths of the sea? He's not fooling around, folks. You're going to face the judgment of God one day, and you truly are, and I know that from my heart. And I don't want you to. I love all of you out there. I want you to know the love that I know for a God that loves me and the life that he can give you. And I pray that for anyone. But folks, we got to start doing what's right, regardless of what the news says, what people say, what political affiliation you are. We've got to do what's right. It's too important to let this opportunity slide by. Do you know that every country that has ever collapsed completely in the world every country that has ever completely collapsed in the world, one of the first things that's happened is they've lost their way morally and had sexual collapse. And we're right there. Hey, folks. It's been a good night tonight. I guess I got a little... Well, no. No, I had a lot to say, and I still do. Come see us at Community Christian Fellowship. We're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our phone number is 740-494-2222. You can also reach us at prospectccf.com. And we'd love to have you in Sunday morning, 10:30. Bible classes at 9:30. Love to have you there. Call anytime. If I'm not there, I'll return your call. God bless you guys. We're out.
You're listening to